Chapter 22. Commodore Ferlant's plan to regain the initiative relied on his people to be the competent, disciplined professionals that he knew they were, and it relied on the Cristang being Cristang. The destroyer City of Falentin departed the task force, performed a series of jumps, and finally jumped in less than 3 light minutes from where the 5 ships of the Cristang pursuit force were holding station. Senior Captain Gurkhaw knew what he should have done. He should have held position with 4 of his ships and dispatched a frigate to Admiral Kikrondo, informing the battlegroup commander of the development and requesting instructions, but that would not have been any fun. Besides, the Admiral's position was precarious, and if Gurkhaw could show successful aggressiveness, the clan leaders could only look favorably on him as an alternative if the weak and indecisive Kikrondo suffered more losses. Instead of doing what he should have done, what he knew the Admiral wanted him to do, Gurkhaw took the excuse of falling back on Kikrondo's standing order to pursue. The Ruhar ships were no longer beyond the distant boundaries of the star system. Therefore, as far as Gurkhaw was concerned, the previous order to pursue them was reinstated. His crews, who sought glory and promotion as much as Gurkhaw did, followed their senior captain's lead with great enthusiasm. Aboard his own light cruiser, a fearless warrior's honor is his greatest weapon, Gurkhaw jumped in to surround the Lenten with 3 ships, holding 2 ships in reserve. As soon as his 3 ships emerged from their jump wormholes, they extended damping fields at maximum power, holding back stealth capability and defensive shields in order to link up the damping fields into an impenetrable barrier around the Ruhar ship. Gurkhaw was relying on speed, shock, and surprise. He paid for it, or rather his people paid for his aggressiveness. The Lenten was ready to be surrounded, expecting a damping field to be extended around it. Rather than activating its own defensive shield, the Lenten channeled all of its power into 2 maser cannons, pouring bolt after bolt of searing maser energy at a single ship. The Cristang destroyer, we are proud to follow the shining example of warrior pilot Ostenval Pentot. The unshielded Pentot staggered, sustaining direct hits to its reactor armor. To protect its ship from a catastrophic reactor breach, the reactor automatically took itself offline and ejected its plasma in a controlled manner, which left the powerful destroyer running on only backup energy supplies. With more maser bolts coming in from the fully shielded Lenten, the Pentot's captain ordered his ship to perform an emergency micro-jump. Knowing that he might later be accused of cowardice by the senior captain, the Pentot's captain judged that being alive to defend himself was a better option than the prospect of posthumously having a ship named after himself. Unfortunately, the damage to the Pentot's reactor and the superheated plasma spewing from the reactor's ejection system had caused a fluctuation in power flow to the jump drive capacitors. The capacitor control system was desperately attempting to compensate when a signal from the bridge forced a jump that the drive system was not ready for. The jump of 10 light seconds was only partly successful, with the coils rupturing while the ship was still inside the wormhole. The unlucky Pentot cleared the event horizon of the jump wormhole's far end, and immediately emergency protocols kicked in automatically. Explosive bolts blew in rapid sequence, bulkheads tore apart, cables were ripped from their connections, and the aft engineering section of the destroyer was deliberately separated in a last-ditch attempt to save the ship. The attempt was successful in that when the remaining stored power in the jump drive capacitors was released in a massive explosion, the drive unit was no longer attached to the ship. Because of that precaution, only half of the Pentot's crew died when the shockwave of the explosion hit the hull. As an additional insult, the destroyer Lenten jumped away just before the damping field could surround her. Senior Captain Gurkhaw howled in anger and frustration.
"Idiot!"
he shouted at the captain of the crippled Pentot, raging at the man's lack of ship maintenance that had left the Pentot so vulnerable. Even though it was Senior Captain Gurkhaw who had ignored his commander's increasingly strident pleas for time to repair their worn-down ships, and even though it had been Gurkhaw's insistence that his 3 ships leave defensive shields offline in order to put all available power into the damping field, that had been a gamble by Gurkhaw that the Pentot's crew had lost, and Gurkhaw was aware that his own ship, the light cruiser Fearless, could easily have been the target of the Ruhar ship's maser fire. If the Ruhar had targeted the Fearless instead, Gurkhaw could very well be dead right then, and that fear fed his rage. With no hesitation, he recalled his 2 reserve ships and ordered immediate pursuit. Because the Ruhar ship had not dropped off a quantum resonator to mask where it had jumped to, Gurkhaw's force was able to pursue with a short jump, within 6 minutes of the Lenten's escape. When the pursuit force arrived at the coordinates of the Ruhar ship's jump, they found not the Lenten, but the still hotly vibrating remnants of an outbound wormhole. The enemy must be desperate, Gurkaw concluded with glee, for the Ruhar ship had again failed to use a quantum resonator, and based on the noisiness of the collapsed jump wormhole, the enemy ship's drive was in poor condition. The enemy task force must be out of resonators and unable to repair their jump drives. Having disobeyed the spirit, if not the letter, of the Admiral's orders, and having subsequently lost a warship, Senior Captain Gurkaw knew that he absolutely had to kill the enemy ship if he had any chance to avoid being thrown in the brig, or even executed for insubordination and incompetence. The Kristang warrior culture could forgive unsanctioned boldness. It could not tolerate failure. He ordered a coordinated jump with all four of his remaining ships, as soon as the enemy ship's jump position could be calculated. This time, Gurkaw told himself while smashing his fist down on a console, he had the enemy. With its jump drive in poor condition, the enemy could not possibly jump away soon enough. At last, victory and revenge would be his. Demonstrating admirable coordination and more than a little bit of luck, Gurkaw's ships all arrived at the designated jump point within a second of each other. The fact that one ship had emerged on the wrong side of the target and that two ships had almost collided because their jumps were so inaccurate bothered Gurkaw not at all. Poor jump accuracy was such a common malady in Kristang jump drives that crews joked their lack of accuracy was a feature, not a flaw. The nagging fact that his ship's jump navigation computers could barely hit the side of a barn from inside the barn did not bother Gurkaw. With four ships, he had been able to surround the enemy. The Ruhar destroyer was right where he had expected it to be, and he... No! Gurkaw shouted with shock as his ship was rocked by multiple explosions. The shields of the Fearless flicked from the strain, and he heard the rattling of the point defense guns warding off more incoming missiles. Then he was thrown across the bridge as the light cruiser spun to one side from taking a railgun dart through her bow. It was an ambush. The enemy must have salted the area with free-floating missiles using the destroyer as a decoy. To his horror, on the main bridge display, he watched that enemy destroyer flying at maximum acceleration directly toward the destroyer Vikron. The two destroyers exchanged heavy fire, with both ships staggering from the close-range impacts. Then the symbols on the display merged as the Ruhar ship deliberately collided with the Vikron. With a combined speed of over 15,000 kilometers per hour, the hulls of both ships were effectively vaporized even before their reactors and drive capacitors exploded. Take us! Gurkaw never finished the order, as a second railgun dart from the cruiser Rue Gastalo had targeted a fearless warrior's honor as his greatest weapon. On its way to the Kristang ship at 18% of the speed of light, the railgun dart did not have time to ponder whether the crew of the ship was indeed fearless, or whether honor was a better weapon than a railgun dart. At the moment, that seemed unlikely. The dart scored a direct hit on the reactor, and the light cruiser blossomed into a blinding ball of light. Two down, Commodore, the Lenten's former captain reported in a strained voice. She had just watched her crewless former ship ram an enemy, and now she was a captain without a ship at all. Commodore Ferlant had taken the doomed Lenten's crew aboard his cruiser. With two captains suddenly aboard one ship, Ferlant took the opportunity to have Lenten's former captain handle the tactical console, allowing Executive Officer Smith to concentrate on maneuvering the Rue Gastalo in combat. The damping field extended by Ferlant's ships had effectively trapped the two surviving ships of the Kristang Pursuit Force, a matching pair of frigates.
Signal to all ships, concentrate fire on that closest frigate, Ferlant ordered.
Of the two small warships, one of them had jumped in considerably off course and had been turning to close the distance to the original target. Now that the target Lenten was no more, and the Ruhar had turned the tables on the Kristang, that wayward frigate was headed at maximum acceleration toward the edge of the damping field. The other frigate, which had with considerable pride jumped in much closer to the Lenten's calculated position, now began to regret its pride, for it found itself the sole target of five Ruhar warships, and shortly thereafter it found itself briefly creating a new sun in the sky as it was wiped from existence.
Shall we shift fire to the other frigate, Commodore? We could... Oh, Smith said with a start. It's our old friend the Glory. Sir, we could swat that tiny insect now and be done with it. No, let it be, Ferlant said with a smile. Drop the damping field. Because fate, for some unknown reason, has a fondness for that particular ship, Commodore? Smith asked quietly. No, Ferlant declared. This time, fate has already favored our little friend out there. I want a ship to carry the good news back to Admiral Kikrondo. When he hears about the little disaster that his pursuit force stupidly jumped into, his overly developed Kristang sense of bravado will demand that he come after us with the remainder of his ships. His bravado and his sense of self-preservation. Kikrondo will know the only way for him to avoid absolute disgrace will be to hunt us down and kill every single one of our ships. That is something for which you have a plan to avoid. Smith raised an eyebrow. Sir? Yes, I do, Mr. Smith. Don't worry about that, Ferlant said with a well-satisfied chuckle. I plan for us to lead Admiral Kikrondo on a merry chase for as long as necessary. While he is vainly pursuing us, he won't be able to interfere in the events on Getanu, and that will get the government there off our backs. I find them considerably more vexing than my counterpart in the Kristang battle group.
After Commodore Ferlant destroyed their pursuit force, the Kristang tried to chase his ships around the system, but both sides knew the situation had become a stalemate. On the ground, Major Perkins and her team had managed to activate a total of 7 projectors before we turned the process over to the Ruha Planetary Government. The Kristang had also been busy activating projectors and attempting to capture or destroy projectors controlled by the Ruha. It had become a bloody ground war, with both sides having few aircraft left to throw into the fight. 5 days after Ferlant destroyed the pursuit force, the Ruha government offered a new ceasefire to Admiral Kikrondo. It took him a day, and probably a lot of alcohol or whatever lizards drink, to swallow the bitter terms and accept the offer. The new ceasefire terms prevented either side from having ships in orbit, but with both sides now controlling deadly projectors, neither commander wanted to risk his ships anywhere near the planet. Both sides ceased activity to activate additional projectors. There was, of course, some cheating on both sides, but it was surprisingly minor. The Ruha had an advantage in active projectors. The Kristang had plenty of projectors under their control, which Skippy was unable to mess with because the Kristang were using manual controls. The real reason that the Kristang had agreed to another ceasefire was the same reason they had offered the first ceasefire. After all the fighting and deaths on both sides, the Ruha federal government still intended to trade the planet for something better. The negotiations were now no longer a secret. All the native Ruha knew, and they all protested, and they all accomplished nothing. Everything we had done, activating secret long-dormant projectors and blasting a Kristang battle group out of the sky, had been to bring the situation back to where it was before Admiral Kikrondo's battle group had arrived to take control of the space around Paradise. Which meant we still had the same problem. The Ruha did not want to keep a relatively isolated agricultural planet. All we had done was drive up the price they could ask the Kristang in return. So far, we hadn't done anything to actually help UNEF. Flying Dutchman.
Welcome back, Colonel Bishop. Major Smythe greeted me with a crisp salute as I stepped out of the dropship.
It's good to be back, Major, I replied. It was good to be back aboard our pirate ship. It felt like home.
Have you been busy? I asked that as a joke, knowing Smythe would have kept his Spec Ops people training full-time.
Oh, no, sir, he said with a straight face. With you on Paradise doing all the work, we've been on vacation, sleeping late and having afternoon tea with crumpets.
Sounds good. What's a crumpet?
I think you Americans would say that it is like a thick sort of pancake, only it's round.
All pancakes are round, I said, confused. Except when my father made them when we went camping and he forgot to bring a spatula to flip them. In that case, he pushed the half-cooked mess around with a spoon to make scrambled pancakes. They were not super yummy.
These are perfectly round, sir. He made a circle with his hands. The batter is poured into a ring on the griddle, so it stays round.
Oh, I brightened. Like an Egg McMuffin.
I wouldn't know, sir, he replied, unintentionally making me feel like an idiot.
Successful mission, sir. The ceasefire is back in effect, but now the Ruha have complete control of the planet.
Partially successful, Major. The Ruha government still intends to trade the planet to the highest bidder.
All we have accomplished so far is to drive up the price the Ruha can get. They won't even need to throw in floor mats or rust proofing. And we have no plan for how to prevent the Ruha from selling the planet out from under UNEF's feet. I'm sure we'll think of something, sir, he said, looking at me in a way that made it clear he expected me to come up with an idea. We always do. Right now, Major, what I have is a whole lot of nothing. On the way to report to Chotek, I stopped by the science lab to check on what our group of geniuses had been doing while I had been stirring up trouble on Paradise. Dr. Sarah Rose and two others were working on some complicated piece of machinery, whose purpose I couldn't even guess at. A resident rocket scientist, Dr. Friedlander, was sitting at a desk doing something on a laptop. Are you working on a design for a better jump drive? I asked. He turned his laptop around so I could see the screen. No, I'm doing Sudoku while I give my brain a rest. It used to be that we'd get a break while a supercomputer took hours to run a simulation for us. But here Skippy has the simulations done before we hit the enter key. Then Skippy tells us what we did wrong with programming the simulation parameters, but he won't fix it for us. You monkeys won't learn anything if I do the work for you, Skippy said through Friedlander's laptop speakers. Yes, Friedlander said. He keeps telling us that. He will tell us we got something wrong, but he won't tell us what is wrong or how to fix it. He flipped a finger at the laptop's camera. It wasn't his index finger. I saw that, Skippy laughed. Dr. Friedlander, just think of how proud you will be of your accomplishments when you figure out how something works on your own. And hey, you almost are able to understand how Theranin doorknobs work. Skippy, I retorted. I wasn't funny. These people, he wasn't joking, Friedlander said as he shook his head sadly. The manual door latch mechanism uses a magnetic catch, but it appears to be pure energy. There's no physical magnet that we can see, so we don't know what generates the magnetic field. Are you making any progress? I asked hopefully. If the science team could bring back useful insights into Theranin or even Kristang technology, UNEF Command would consider this mission a great success. But our team of geniuses didn't know how a doorknob functioned? That was not encouraging. Not yet, Friedlander admitted. That was a nice way of saying no. We have not made any measurable progress. This trip has not been entirely useless so far. We have been able to invalidate some ideas we developed during the last mission, and from what we have observed during jumps, we are certain that our current theories of quantum mechanics are wrong. Technically, instead of adding to humanity's base of knowledge, we are subtracting from it. There, see? Skippy said cheerily. Look at how clever you monkeys are. That is not helping, Skippy, I said, knowing that helping wasn't part of Skippy's plan. Seriously, you can't give us a hint about a freaking doorknob? Nope. Well, here's a hint. If you can figure out the doorknob, you'll be a step closer to understanding our reactor containment system. And I shouldn't be saying this. Our defensive energy shields. Reactors? I asked. How about the reactors? No, Friedlander said dejectedly. Same with the jump drive, the stealth field, artificial gravity, you name it. Colonel, everything on this ship is beyond our understanding. So far, I said as encouragement. So far. Chotek let out a long breath and ran a hand through his hair, in a combination of frustration and fatigue. We all felt like he did. Colonel Bishop, this operation has been entirely successful so far. Congratulations to you and your team. Before I could respond, he added, Now we are back to the original problem. The Ruha still intend to give up this planet through a negotiated settlement. All we appear to have accomplished is strengthening the negotiating position of the Ruha. The Kristang will have to offer more valuable territory in exchange for Paradise. I could cling to the hope that the Kristang are not able to deliver a price the Ruha will find acceptable. However, we know the Ruha do not want this planet at all. The Ruha desire to get rid of Paradise. The only question is, what kind of bargain they get for it? What an asshole, I thought. He could have paused one freaking minute after praising the merry band of pirates, giving me time to pass on the mission commander's congratulations to the whole crew. Or better yet, he could have done it himself. Instead, he soured a nice moment by moving directly on to the next problem. Some people have absolutely no sense of timing. Sir, I said, trying to keep the irritation from my voice and losing that struggle. Before, we did not have any opportunity to affect the outcome here. The Kristang had control of the planet, and the Ruha weren't willing to commit the resources necessary to dislodge them. Now we could potentially give the Ruhar a reason to retain Paradise under their control.
How? Chotek asked simply. How can we do that without exposing our involvement?
We also need to return to the relay station in order to complete our primary mission, he reminded me needlessly.
As of this moment, we do not have a working plan to ensure the Ruhar keep control of Paradise. With the operation on Paradise completed, we can move on to plan in the next phase. Until now, we haven't had the time to think about it.
Do you have any ideas? Any at all?
Sir, I would rather not discuss potential options until I have had time to review them with my team for feasibility, I said truthfully. What I did not say was that I had zero ideas right then. I also did not mention my pride in knowing the word feasibility that had been on an officer training PowerPoint slide. I'd had to look up the definition because I had no clue what feasibility meant at the time.
If something could be feasible, did that mean fees was a verb? How would you fees?
I would look that up later.
We do not have to depart for the relay station immediately. I request 5 days here to develop plans.
3 days, Colonel, Chotek replied.
Every day we are away from the relay station jeopardizes our primary mission. I am concerned the situation there may have changed during our absence. With the fluid military situation in this sector between the Theranin and Jarapha, the crew rotation schedule may have changed, or a damaged warship may have stopped at the station to facilitate repairs. For all we know, the Jarapha might have forced the Theranin away from the area and captured that station. While we remain here considering options to secure the safety of humans on Paradise, we risk the safety of humans on Earth.
He was right, and I couldn't argue with him about it.
3 days. Yes, sir.
To get my brain going, I went to the gym for a hard workout, then took a quick shower and went to my office. While I was in the gym, I had been kicking ideas around in my head and listening to ideas from the Spec Ops commanders, including Major Smythe.
Skippy, I said as I slumped in my chair. My legs were rubbery from exercise.
We have some ideas I want to discuss with you.
Of course you do, he sighed.
Another shining opportunity for monkeys to be smarter than me. Go ahead, make me look like an idiot again. I've been working on the problem of getting the Ruhar to retain Paradise, and so far I got nothing. Nothing. With all my ginormous brain power, I can't think of a solution. What's going to happen is your stupid meat-based monkey brain is going to say, duh, what about this, and solve the whole freaking problem.
Damn, I hate you. I hate my life.
Skippy, we don't dream up ideas to make you feel like an idiot.
Thank you, Joe. That's just a delicious bonus, thus reminding me why I so very much hate you, Joe.
Hey, I'd love for you to solve all our problems for us, I admitted. That way UNEF Command could bust your balls about every freaking decision you make instead of mine. Since you can't think up solutions to every problem, we humans have to step up.
Your species is maddeningly clever, especially you, Joe. I speculate that when you don't have big teeth or claws and can't fly, the only way your species avoided being eaten by leopards is by becoming clever. Anyway, he sighed again. Go ahead, tell me your brilliant, clever, innovative, monkey-brained idea, and let's get my humiliation over with, shall we?
Skippy, I wanted to discuss ideas with him, but needed to satisfy my curiosity first.
Why is it every time we think up an idea you couldn't, you act like it's the first time it's ever happened? You must be used to it by now.
That is not entirely my fault, Joe. In my matrix is a processor that keeps track of time and events. As you may have noticed, my occasional absent-mindedness...
Occasional?
Occasional?
He ignored me.
This processor is perhaps not functioning optimally. The truth is, this processor simply cannot believe any of you lesser beings could be smarter than me about anything. It can't happen, therefore my processor assumes that the data input is garbled or that I am hallucinating. In order to acknowledge you having any kind of a good idea, I have to manually override this processor. So, emotionally, it is new to me each time.
Wow. I'm sorry that...
Also, on my timescale, so much time passes between you having a good idea that it is an exceedingly rare occurrence. Like, every couple hundred million years, an asteroid crashes into Earth. But that kind of thing is not in a typical 5-day forecast, you know?
The one constant is that you are an asshole.
Yes! See, Joe, he said happily. There is order in the universe. So, getting back to the subject, what moronic ideas do you wish to waste my time with?
Moronic? Did you already forget the conversation we just had about how clever monkeys are?
Sometimes. How clever monkeys sometimes are. Rarely.
Go ahead. Hit me with your best shot, Joey, my boy.
All right. The Ruhar used to want this planet before the wormhole shift made access to paradise impractical for them. Now the wormhole that connects to Ruhar territory is far away, while the wormhole that connects to Kristang territory is closer. Our question is this. Can you use your magic beanstalk, I meant the Elder Wormhole controller module and one of our cargo bays, to reset the wormhole connections back to the way they used to be? Or maybe just cut off the Kristang wormhole so they no longer want paradise?
Okay. Okay, that is not an astronomically stupid question, he said with an undertone of surprise. I assume you led off with your best idea, and they will only grow progressively moronic from here.
That was not a totally stupid question, but the answer is no. No on many, many levels, Joe. First, if I shut down another wormhole, someone is going to quickly grow very suspicious that wormholes mysteriously shut down near the only two planets in the galaxy that are occupied by humans.
Crap. Okay, I had considered that problem.
Then there is the larger issue that the more I screw with wormhole connections, the greater risk there is that we could trigger an unpredictable cascade of wormhole shifts. That wormhole controller module allows me to adjust one wormhole at a time. I can't use it to change the parameters of the underlying wormhole network. Joe, I can very temporarily change the connection of one wormhole as long as it goes right back to its baseline program shortly. A permanent change risks the network deciding to institute a major shift that might be very bad for humanity. A major shift could bring that wormhole near Earth back to life.
You never mentioned that, I protested.
Crap!
That is an unlikely possibility, Joe, as long as we do not screw further with the network.
There is worse news. That wormhole we shut down is not actually the closest one to Earth. There is another dormant wormhole much closer to Earth. That closer wormhole has not been active for millions of years. If we screw with wormholes, the network might decide to wake that closer wormhole from its dormancy. So, while I could play with the paradise wormholes to persuade the Ruhar to keep this planet, that would be an extremely risky idea.
Damn. That was the easiest idea we had.
Easiest. You think adjusting an elder wormhole is easy?
Easy for us, Skippy. You do all the work.
Fair enough, I guess. What other ideas do you have?
My second idea probably won't work either. We thought that whatever planet the Kristang are offering to trade for paradise, we could cut off wormhole access to it. Then the Ruhar wouldn't want to make the trade, but now I see that won't work.
Nope, it won't work. Same problem of potentially triggering a cascading wormhole shift. That idea is even worse, Joe. If we cut off access to one planet the Kristang are offering to trade, they could then offer another planet, and we'd have to cut off access to that one also.
Man, the Maxalks and Rindaloo would get super suspicious right away about a series of wormholes shutting down. One wormhole shutting down is an isolated anomaly. A series of wormholes going dead is a pattern. The Rindaloo and Maxalks are smart, and they have reasonably smart AIs. A pattern will attract their interest. You do not want to get those senior species involved in any way, Joe.
Yeah, I figured that.
Crap.
Then our third idea is... No, that won't work either. Damn it. How can we get the Kristang to not take over paradise when the Ruhar are eager to hand it to them?
Stupid hamsters, Skippy grumbled. The only truly valuable thing on the whole planet was me, and the Ruhar stuck me on a dusty shelf. Serves them right for...
Just like that, bam. An idea came into my head.
Oh, wow. I just had an idea.
Skippy chuckled. Worse than your other ideas that we just discarded?
Better. We've been thinking of ways to make the Ruhar decide that giving up paradise isn't worth the deal, even though they really don't want the planet anymore. What if instead we found a way to make them want to keep paradise, make them really, really want to keep it?
How? The whole planet is a farm, Joe. What are we going to do, grow an extra super prize-winning pumpkin or something?
He laughed. Gitanu is a farm now. I used the Ruhar name for the planet. When the Kristang originally came here, they hoped to find valuable artifacts from a crashed Elder starship.
Duh, I know that. I was on that ship. I think.
The lizards did not find a functioning Elder power tap, and then they only found a few other less valuable trinkets. Now that I have left... There is nothing else of value on, around, or under the planet. That's why the Kristang Black Tree Clan was willing to give it up without a fight way back when the Ruhar originally came here. Did you not pay attention when I was telling you all this important information?
I did pay attention, Skippy. I'm trying to think of a good way to explain my idea to you.
Oh, well, take your time, Joe. After all, the clock isn't ticking for the survival of UNEF. We have plenty of time.
Damn it. Fine. I hated when an untrustworthy beer can decided to remind me of duty.
The Kristang are eager to get the planet back because they think valuable elder goodies are still buried there. What if the Ruhar thought the same thing?
Great idea, Joe, except for one problem. The Ruhar are on Paradise now. Any hint of elder stuff that we gave to them could be quickly checked out and disproved.
Excellent point, Skippy, but you don't understand my idea. What if the Ruhar did find valuable elder stuff on Paradise, even one item? Then you could plant data suggesting there is a lot more. The Ruhar would believe it then.
Wow. And you call me sneaky.
Don, that is a good idea. You're correct. If the Ruhar found any valuable Elder artifacts, they would certainly want to retain control of Paradise. There is only one problem with your idea, Joe. The fact that there are no valuable Elder artifacts on Paradise, you dumbass.
There aren't any there now, Skippy.
Skippy took one of his signature pauses.
If you are proposing some sort of time travel, Joe, then I hate to tell you.
No time travel involved. I'm suggesting we go find some valuable elder thing, hide it on Paradise, and arrange for the Ruhar to find it.
Just like that?
Just like that. Come on, we found a bunch of previously unknown elder sites on our last mission.
Ugh, Skippy groaned.
May I point out that we also found a lot of useless and damaged elder sites, and that we also ran into an ambush that very nearly destroyed the ship?
Details, I said with a dismissive wave of my hand.
Assuming we could find a valuable enough Elder artifact, would that persuade the Ruhar to keep Paradise?
Assuming? That is one hell of an assumption.
Yes. The answer is yes. Every species desires Elder technology more than anything and will fight to get it and keep it.
This would need to be a very valuable Elder artifact, Joe. Something that is worth the Ruhar permanently stationing a battle group at Paradise.
Understood. One problem at a time, Skippy. Let's tackle one problem at a time.
Okay. We have a plan for incentivizing the Ruhar to keep Paradise. We can figure out where to find Elder stuff later after we go back to the relay station. This buys us a lot of time.
Tackling only one problem at a time is how you paint yourself into a corner, Joe.
Desperate times call for desperate measures, Skippy.
Do they call for stupid measures?
Oh, shut up. You're just mad because a monkey thought up a plan before you.
If you call hoping for Santa Claus to deliver an Elder artifact a plan, then sure.
No, I'm hoping for a miracle from Skippy Claus.
Since your idea is to hide goodies on Paradise for the Ruhar to find, perhaps you should be wishing for the Easter Bunny, Joe. This would be the best Easter egg of all time.
After I explained my idea of planting an Easter egg on Paradise, the plan was enthusiastically approved by Chotek, Chang, Sims, and Smythe. Except for the nagging detail that, you know, we didn't have a valuable Elder artifact to hide on Paradise, or any idea where to find one, or any idea how to search for one. Despite having one plan, we still remained in the vicinity of Paradise for the full 3 days, in case we thought up a better plan that could be implemented sooner. No one thought up a better plan, so we set course for a Neptune-sized cold gas planet at the outskirts of the Paradise system and headed there at 75% acceleration. As soon as we swung behind the far side of that planet, and Skippy assured us there were no other ships around, we jumped, using the great bulk of the planet to conceal our gamma-ray burst from prying eyes on Paradise.